When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Commissioner Gordon.
Yes?
I've always wondered, where does that big old batlight come from?
Why, it's right on top of police headquarters.
I just love to see it.
Oh, hi there. Welcome to You'll Love to See It, FanBite's movie review podcast. Every month, we pick a theme. Every week, we watch a movie. And then we decide where its VHS tape belongs in our delightful neighborhood video store. We'll get to judge whether it's got enough plant poison to modify our brain chemicals and make its way into the staff pick shelf. Whether it's no glacial era, but it's still just cool and crisp enough to secure a spot in our totally chill middle aisle, or whether it's nothing but a half-witted inflatable henchman and therefore shall be banished to our dreaded dumpster where everyone really likes Tony Robbins. Working the counter today, we have yours truly, Fernanda, why are all the gorgeous ones homicidal maniacs, Praches, and my fellow snowy cones thug, Danielle Dong with bad wings, Riondu. How are you, Danielle?
I am doing great because this is going to be a very fun movie to talk about.
Are we all just dongs with bad wings?
I mean, that's this whole movie. That's this movie right here.
As a reminder, before we get to the movie, this month we're doing Payday May. That means we're watching movies where an actor infamously got a massive paycheck from a movie, according to Hollywood legend and or the reporting we could find on the subject. So get ready for big budgets, big egos, and big bold spectacles as we dive all the way into Payday May. And this week, we're taking another look at our favorite caped sad boy Batman, this time through the beautifully deranged lenses of director Joel Schumacher, who handpicked Arnold Schwarzenegger to portray the punny Mr. Freeze for a $25 million paycheck, which apparently is about 25 times more than what Sunny George Clooney got to portray the main bat dude himself. Good gig if you can get it, and if you're Arnold Schwarzenegger in the late 90s, you can get it. In more ways than one, if you know what I mean. No, just me. Okay. Yeah. So literally just me. Okay, I'll take it. We'll get into all of that. In the meantime, sit back, relax, rid your brain of every preconceived notion of what's good and logical, and join us for Batman and Robin.
My name is Freeze. Learn it well, for it's the chilling sound of your doom.
I probably should have mentioned this. I'm poison. Poison Ivy.
And the only man who can stop them.
Hi, Freeze. I'm Batman.
Can't do it alone.
Batman will watch his beloved Gotham perish.
Bundle up, boys. There's a storm coming.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
All right, everyone. Chill.
George Clooney.
I'm not the marrying kind.
I know you've had your wild night.
Good night.
Wild doesn't quite cover it.
Chris O'Donnell.
Come join me. My garden needs tending.
She loves me and not you, and it's driving you crazy.
This is why Superman works alone.
Uma Thurman.
So many people to kill. So little time.
Alicia Silverstone.
And you are?
Batgirl.
That's not awfully PC. What about bat person.
Found the bat cave.
She knows who we are.
I guess we just have to kill her.
In a Joel Schumacher film.
We're going to need a bigger cave.
Batman and Robin.
So we are about to fly into our first segment called Setting the Scene, where we introduce the movie at hand and have a little spoiler-free chat about our own personal histories with it. But first, to those unfamiliar with the story, here's a brief summary that I wrote of this movie. Rated a depressing 12% on Rotten Tomatoes with an equally sad 3.7 score on IMDb, Batman and Robin is basically 2 hours of nonstop stuff happening. The gist of it is that Mr. Freeze, a mad scientist who fell into a vat of cold shit, I guess, and is now cold himself, has frozen his wife while he pursues a cure for her fatal illness. He joins forces with Poison Ivy, who I guess wants plants to take over the world. Gotham and the world's really only hope to stop them is Batman, of course, but also Robin and also Batgirl. Also, Alfred is dying, and then there's also Bane. Also, Al McPherson wants to marry Batman. Again, like I said, it is a lot. But we'll get into all of that, or at least most of it, in due time, because first we're going to move on with our Setting the Scene segment. And I will ask, of course, my wonderful co-host, Danielle, what is your history? What is your background with this piece, Batman and Robin?
So it's a little weird. I was sort of trying to think about how many times I've seen this movie, and I don't think I had ever sat down to watch it in full before. But I always had a huge fondness for it because I definitely caught it like playing at my parents' house at some point. I was an adult, by the way. I never watched this, you know, when it came out. I would have been 13 when it came out. So I was like aware of it. I was like aware of the world somewhat, you know, in the late 90s. But everybody just always talked about what a pile of shit it was. It was such trash, that it was so stupid, that it was so crappy, blah, 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 blah. That's all anybody ever talks about this movie. Or, you know, at least that's the sort of popular consensus. So I never like went out of my way to watch it, but it was definitely on at one point. And I think it was like the prison break sequence, which I won't spoil anything, but there's a prison break sequence. And I was just like, that's Poison Ivy. That's
Mr.
Bruce.
It's a Batman movie. Of course there's a prison escape.
Right. Of course. Like, of course. Of course. I'm not like a huge Batman fan, as everybody has probably figured out at this point. I really like Harley Quinn, the animated series. That's probably my favorite Batman thing of all time. But
Yeah,
I remember really enjoying it and thinking, why does everybody say this is so crappy? And I read a piece once online that was like a defense of this movie as like the most true to the spirit of like a Batman 66 or like the Batman, like, you know, like the original series, like very cartoonish, very campy, very fun. And saying like, this movie got such a bad rap, like it's so campy and so fun. I only have good memories of this. Other than the sort of miasma of very wrong people saying this movie is bad, like that incredibly wrong, like everyone on earth is wrong. This is like a crime on par with people thinking Showgirls wasn't satire, which like, again, I don't know what's wrong with everyone on this planet. I'm very sorry, but I don't know what's wrong with people. Anyway, that's my history with the movie.
We don't want to hang out with them anyway.
I don't need to.
Who are literally the vast majority of people, because everybody really hates this movie.
I don't understand it.
A quick note before I talk about my history with it. It's funny that I saw in your notes and you just mentioned really liking the Harley Quinn animated series. Yeah. And my husband, Rodrigo, who has been on this show and who I talk about every time on the show, so you know all about him, but he really likes the series. And as we were watching the movie, and he keeps trying to convince me to watch it, but I hate animated stuff, so it's a lost battle. Yeah. But as we were watching the movie, he was like, you and Danielle, he didn't know you watched it, I didn't know you watched it, need to watch this, because it's so you, and I'm sure Danielle is going to freaking love it.
I genuinely love it. Like, I actually love it, love it. Yeah.
So, and I saw your notes. I was like, he was absolutely right. But my history with this, and we kind of talked when we talked about the 1989 Batman, like, my memories was of this and Batman Forever, which were the ones that were, like, most on TV when I was a kid. Yeah. Just like this, watching bits and pieces. And I also only watched the full thing for the first time as an adult. And I watched it, I don't remember, with a friend who like really liked an ex or a friend. I don't remember exactly, but like who really liked, that's all I remember. Like just hearing about after I finished watching, I saw both Forever and Robin, I think on the same day. And I remember they were like, you do know that everybody hates these fucking movies, right? Like, I'll show you. I'm like, we'll watch, but they're bad. And I remember just like this people, why do people hate fun?
Honestly.
Like, don't they like enjoying themselves? So I just remember finding it just both of them just incredibly entertaining. And then watching it again yesterday, I was watching. I was consciously, my brain was very much aware of the badness of it all. I was like, my conscious brain was like, I understand why this has got 12% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. This is awful in many ways. However, the heart wants what it wants, as Selena Gomez once said, and probably some people before her, but the main person would be Selena Gomez.
Sure.
The heart wants what it wants. And my heart was singing.
Yes.
My heart sang. I feel like I would like to read the text that you mentioned, Danielle, in defense of the movie, because I feel like we're literally the only two people on earth who will stand up and defend and whoever wrote that.
Yeah, for real. Who will
stand up and defend Batman and Robin. And I love it for us.
Honestly, I'm gonna sit here. I'm gonna directly stare into the soul of other people.
Paul said something on the chat. I don't know if that means Paul also liked the movie. Yeah. I actually don't know. Paul,
talk to him, Danielle. I love this movie. Thank you, Paul. I'm leaning in. This is. I know we don't normally do this, but I'm talking to you, dear listener, who has a bias against good things and campy things and fun things and colorful things and has any affinity whatsoever for the grim, dark, sour, dour, misery, angry Batmans. I'm staring into your eyes. I'm putting my hands on your shoulders. I'm shaking you violently. And I'm saying, what the actual holy fuck is wrong with you? You're wrong. You have wrong ideas about movies. And then I'm petting you on the back and I'm saying, you're allowed to have your opinions, but you're very, very deeply, deeply wrong because this movie is so much more fun than any of those crappy, terrible things. Thank you.
I feel like maybe after our conversation, like hearing what we have to, like just give our talk a chance and then maybe rewatch it with a different framing of it.
Yeah. You know, normally I'm a very gentle soul. Fernanda, normally I don't say things to people that are that judgy, but like with this, I feel very secure in my feelings, you know? So, yeah.
Hey, literally the only person, I love it. I'm pretty sure Joel Schumacher isn't alive anymore, or I would be like, I would have you like write an email to him or something.
Dear Joel, I'll check as we move on. I will check. But I know we have to move on. I know this is longer than we usually go in this segment. I just needed to let everybody know how I felt.
I feel like this required like a preamble because people will look at it and be like, pretty sure this will be a dumpster pick. And we need to prepare them so they're not shocked conversation here. So I guess that settles it for our little spoiler-free section. And we are ready to jump into our form-fitting batsuits that perfectly outline our gorgeous asses and enter the more spoiler-filled section of the show, which we call Stripping It Down. Stripping It Down, as you know, We know you've been here before. You can't quit us. It's a part of the episode where we discuss details of the film, including specific aspects of the plot and the characters, stuff that otherwise we refer to as spoilers. So in case you haven't seen the movie, beware before entering this section with us. Okay, there's a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah.
That's a lot to discuss. But I guess let's start with the man of the hour. Because as we mentioned on the intro, Arnold Schwarzenegger, I just refer to him as Schwarzy because we're BFFs.
You are BFFs with him. There is a beautiful image. Yeah, it's really good.
There is a literal photo of me and Arnie or Schwarzy. And that means we have a bond. I get to call him Schwarzy, but he made $25 million for the movie, which according to George Clooney himself on a Howard Stern interview, he said that he only made about $1 million. So
sure.
He was the literal Batman. At the time, he wasn't as big of a star as he is now. He was doing ER. He actually shot this at the same time as she was shooting ER. So he was up and coming. And this was obviously after the Conan and the Terminators and whatever. So Schwarzy was already a pretty big name.
He's
so
top
that makes
billed.
Sense.
Yeah, he's top billed in the credits, in the opening credits. So yeah.
And that was and apparently Joel Schumacher was fixated. He just really wanted I saw a behind the scenes thing in which he talked about how he fixated on actors. So he could only fall in love with one actor for a role, and then only after it was a definitive no, he allowed himself to like other people for the role. So and there's in the same little thing, there's Schwarzenegger saying something to the lines of Joel called me and said that if I didn't do it, he wouldn't do the movie. felt a little pressure. Pretty sure $25 million sweetened the deal. But I think that was kind of what he was making at the time. I found this write-up that I could only find on the Wayback Machine on Time. And it was a story called Hollywood Fades to Red. And it was about money and Hollywood and whatever. I didn't read the whole thing. It was boring.
Sure,
but at one point they were talking about inflation and inflation caused by salaries of superstars. And some people saying that, no, the marketing costs were the problem. And some people saying that the inflation was the problem. And then, there was a thing about how the Warner Brothers agreed to pay, and this I'm quoting, agreed to pay Arnold Schwarzenegger $25 million to appear as Mr. Freeze, the villain in the next Batman installment. Some executives are complaining that Warner is compounding the cost problem. Daily says that the deal makes sense because Schwarzenegger's presence will boost the film's grosses, particularly overseas. Arnold is also taking a lot less of the film's gross profits than usual. He generally gets up to 20%. As well as a reduced share in profits from Batman-related merchandise. The studio already has $50 million guarantees from licenses. Arnold will make more money out of doing the Eraser than he will do Batman, says Daily. Eraser is another movie that he was doing at about the same time.
Sure. Yeah.
And they go on to say it wasn't a groundbreaking deal. But still, it's a truckload of money to play a guy who speaks in puns. Ask you, Danielle, how do you feel about, there are two villains in this movie and we'll get to the other one, but how do you feel about the character of Mr. Freeze?
I mean, I truly, all I can think about, and I'm not a narcissist, I promise, not everything is about me, I promise. However, I don't think there's a better job in the universe than... putting on a weird costume and making dad jokes and getting $25 million for it. Now, I know, I understand that makeup sounded rough. That was five hours in the makeup chair. I'm not saying that's easy. I'm not saying this is an easy job by any means. I don't think it's easy. However, to fucking put on a stupid outfit and make incredibly stupid dad jokes at everyone and make $25 million to do that, chef's amazing. Fucking kiss. That is, again, this you know, it angers me on the level that capitalism is bad and that nobody should have all that money. It does. Like, yes, we need to be honest about that. However, if your Hollywood excess is in service of a movie about dicks and nipples and butts in leather and the campiest costumes in the entire universe and everything, and the whole thing is just one big campy gay kink joke, then I'm fine with Hollywood excess going towards that. I'm more fine with it than going towards anything else in the entire universe. So, like, yes, I will absolutely excuse this as, like, okay, that sounds like a great job.
Like, I even put it down on my notes. Stop glorifying the hustle and start glorifying whatever Schwarzenegger is speaking only in ice puns is.
Like, everything he says
is a pun.
One of the best parts, and this speaks to the other villain too, which I know we'll get to. And I know we have some differing opinions about Uma Thurman's performance as Poison Ivy.
Yeah.
However, I just want to point out, both of our villains are scientists who had something bad happen to them, where they go through a transition of we're nerds with glasses and are now like super villains. One is like that sort of masculine ideal, like he's like ultra pumped and like giant with giant muscles and like, you know, super freakish like muscles. Yes, I know he has a whole thing about being cold, whatever.
Yeah, he needs to be cold at all times in a suit that is powered by
diamonds. Diamonds. It's great. And he wears like a smoking jacket when he's not in his suit. Like, it's perfect. There's that. And then the woman villain, like, it reads to me as like a complete joke on the, oh, she's really hot, but they put glasses on her, so she's a dork.
Yep.
Like, they do that, and they do that multiple times in this movie. And again, it feels very winking and very aware, where it's like, it's Uma Thurman. Like, it's one of the hottest people who's ever lived. You put glasses on her and tell her to act like a nerd, and it's like, oh, and now she's pretty. It's very funny to me. But it's funny to me that they do that with both of our villains here. They're both, like, dorks. Like, hot dorks. Who a bad thing happened and now they're villains. Like, it's real good.
Uma Thurman walked so that Rachel Lee Cook could fly. I checked and she's all that is from 99. So it was after this.
It was just after, honestly.
So they got inspired by Poison Ivy.
Yeah, they truly, truly did.
It is.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing, for instance, in this interview with Howard Stern, George Clooney, who hates the movie, he talks about how, like, when it comes on, he, like, cringes and changes the channel.
Clooney, this is the best thing you've ever done. Don't cringe.
I hard disagree, because ZR is the best thing that's ever happened to the planet as a whole.
All right.
But
I understand.
It's up there. But what he was saying is, like, he didn't even, like, run into Schwarzenegger, like, on set, that they didn't even interact, and that, like, basically he was put on a scene and told to do things and he did them. And that shows to me, like when you talk about the badness, the objective badness of the movie, in that sense, I feel like it's the worst for me are the dialogues, because none of it feels natural. Sure. None of them feel like interactions, right? It just feels like people saying funny things all the time. And I feel like a lot of it is because it doesn't seem like the actors are connected with the story, right? They just seem to be saying the things that they need to be saying at the time, which is a shame, because these are really good actors. But Robin is Chris O'Donnell. Batgirl is Alicia Silverstone, who is not Alicia. She's Alicia, as I've learned from her own TikToks or something. And, like, then you have Uma Thurman. Then you have Arnie. Like, it's so many good people that it is to me upsetting that they all come across as just, like, really bad actors. But, again, everything is so ridiculous. And so over the top. And that's what I keep saying. Like, if you're just going to be dumb, just do it.
Go for
it. With determination.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
But I said, like, if you're going to be a deranged mess, be a determined deranged mess.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, just lean into it. Put your back into it.
Like, and it's fucking beautiful. Like, that's the thing. Do you know what? I'm just going to say this. Okay. This is what a superhero movie should be. Okay. This is what it should be. And I'm not saying always. I'm not saying, oh, this is the only thing it can be, that you can never do something else. However, this should be the rule and not the exception. Colorful and campy and stupid and gay as humanly possible and kinky and weird and like obsessed with leather and nipples and like neon. That's what you should fucking do with a comic book movie. I'm just going to say it. I'm sorry. But I think that's what you should do, because this is the place for it. This is a great place for it. You should have fun with it. Sad, angry man dowers are just not fun or exciting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it's a personal taste thing, but I'm with you. Like, I've said in the previous Batman episode, and if you guys haven't listened to it, go back. Because we also have a really cool guest. But like, I understand the appeal of Nolan's sad Batman. I understand why people were drawn to it, because it is kind of, it's a dark like story, right? Like, this is an orphan who is obviously decided to deal with his emotional problems by spending a lot of money on becoming
dressing like a bat. Yes.
Like a bat and becoming a vigilante. So it's like, obviously this is a person who has some issues, but I am not a fan of like gloomy Batman. He bores me. He's just not, if I'm going to take a sad boy, I'll take like the Daredevil. I feel like he's sad with layers, and at least like he has friends and like a social circle and a job.
Like, he does things, right? Like, he's a lawyer. He tries to help people. He at least does things. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like he's a more interesting and layered character. Like, I don't like... But I like George Clooney's Batman.
I do, too.
Even though Clooney hates him. Like, he just seems like fun times. Like, this is a millionaire sad boy I could hang out with. Like,
whether he played it this way intentionally or not. And I'm open to either interpretation, truly. He really reads as like he's a gay billionaire who has a beard and like makes appearances and does all that kind of shit. But like, he knows who he really loves. He really loves Robin. He really loves Alfred. I'm not saying in the same way, but that's kind of his family. That's who he cares about. And he just kind of does shit that he kind of feels like he has to do because, all right, whatever, I got to do these things. I'll be a philanthropist, blah, 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 blah. I'll show up at these things. I'll date a woman, I guess. Jesus, if I have to. Like, in this movie, the men have to be poisoned to be attracted to a woman. Like, they have to literally be drugged to be attracted to Uma fucking Thurman, the hottest woman who's ever lived. Like, I cannot, under any circumstances, be convinced that anything was supposed to be heterosexual in this movie. Like, anything whatsoever. Except for maybe the woman who is dating Batman. Bruce Wayne. Like, Elle McPherson. Maybe she's not gay, but everyone else, in every sequence, in every moment, in every frame of this movie, is incredibly, like, heightened gay.
I love that read, and I'm adopting it for myself. It just makes me like the movie
I have one piece of supporting evidence. Yeah. You ready for my supporting evidence? Okay.
Yes.
I also think that Joel Schumacher, who again has said in an interview, and he is no longer with us, God rest his soul, that he has slept with between 10,000 and 20,000 men in his life.
Which aspirational.
Is absolutely a fucking king. Fucking king.
Amazing.
Like, literally a fucking king.
And like, I thought I was a whore. I love it.
What a fucking inspiration. Love him forever.
I have so much to learn. Okay.
There is a line And I caught this and I like really, I actually ended up doing a little bit of research on this with my lawyer girlfriend. She helped me do the research and actually find the cases.
Oh, okay. Amazing.
But there is a very, very specific line. It's in the, when they're doing the telescope dedication, whatever the fuck scene where, you know, Mr. Philanthropist, he's dedicating all these resources to science and this telescope to try to help whatever. And they talk about, oh, it has this imaging power. It could do all this stuff. And he distinctly says, hopefully not my bedroom. And then they start talking about his beard, the woman, whatever. She's just a beard. And like, that's a really direct line to a very, very famous case in the 80s. It was an ACLU case. It was a really, really famous Supreme Court decision where an anti-sodomy law was upheld. It's called Bowers v. Hardwick. And the, you know, the client in that case specifically said that exact thing. There was a cop who came into his bedroom while he was, you know, engaged with completely consensual sex with a dude, and the cop arrested them. And like, it was upheld. It was upheld in 1986. And like, he said that in all the sort of press around it, he asked the cop, he was like, excuse me, what are you doing in my bedroom? It was like this very direct correlation here between like, no, don't look in my bedroom. Don't come to my bedroom. Don't be in my bedroom. Like, I really think this is like a very direct thing that like, yes, of course, it's like a little subtle because it's this movie with a massive fucking budget and it's Hollywood and et cetera, but like with a gay director who has also had both the like dude characters who are like, you know, supposedly heterosexual who have to be drugged to be attracted to a woman. Like, it's very, it reads as like hyper gay. And anyway, it took until 2003 for that law to be gotten rid of, which is absolutely batshit fucking insane to me. Like, for gay sex to be legal took until 2003 in that state, which I believe was Georgia, which is like, are you serious? Like, I think I said this like to my girlfriend this morning, but I was like, I was having gay sex by then. Me, I'm a millennial. Like, this is insane to me. Like, what the fuck?
Absolutely, it's wild because when we talk about like gay rights, and I think a lot of people are like, ah, but like nowadays it's fine to be gay, and it's like, guys, this was literally 20 years ago, not even that,
not even like not even two decades ago, where like this was struck down. Anyway, absolutely crazy, but for me, I thought this was like a really direct correlation. He's also wearing these really gay turtlenecks the whole time. I can't even. And the fact, okay, sorry, last piece of evidence. This movie starts, like the first shots of this movie are men's nipples and men's leather clad butts. Like, that's how this starts. That's how we start this movie. And anybody who even begins to try to tell me there's anything heterosexual about this movie, I'm like, are you serious? Are you serious? Did you see that shot? That's butt. That's a butt in leather. I rest my case. I will now sit, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. I rest my case. This movie is gay.
Like, I'm like knocking my little gavel thing. The verdict. Danielle is correct.
Thank you.
As Paul just said on the chat, Danielle showed her work 100%. No objections, Your Honor.
There are no objections.
Yeah, I don't know how people... I don't object to anything. As the prosecutor, I will give up my case. I will drop the charges and accept that I'm wrong and that Danielle's correct. Not that I was ever arguing that this is a hetero movie, but just for the effect of the courtroom here. just to pretend like we had opposing counsel to your arguments, which we didn't, because there's no opposing. They're ironclad, really. And we know it because you literally had a lawyer help you build your case.
I did. I had an actual ACLU lawyer help me build my case. So I think that's perfect. I'm good here. Yeah.
But I do, and it's interesting, right? Because like one of the main things whenever everybody brings up this movie, and whenever people want to mock the movie, they bring up the fucking nipples that like both Batman and Robin and Batgirl had tiny nipples. She had more discreet, pointier, angular, subtle nipples. Very, I called them artistic, and I'm sorry for it. But I'm not, because I'm never sorry for my stupid little puns, but yeah, so they all have nipples. It would have been very misogynistic for Batgirl to not have nipples. But the thing with the nipples, and I think a lot of it is interesting because, like, I think people had a problem with the sort of like hypersexualization of the costumes. And it's like, have you ever seen Wonder Woman? Like how she was portrayed forever. Have you seen the suits that like Catwoman has always worn?
Yeah.
That honestly leave nothing to the imagination. Like women have been dressed, every like superhero woman, every sidekick woman, like in those outfits forever. But the moment that men are put in a, and it's like, it's just nipples, dude. Like, what the fuck? I don't even understand it. But I do think it has a lot to do, and this is my theory, with the fact that the bat suit, like, and the angles and the very deliberate choices showed, like, butts and abs and nipples and showed the male protagonists and heroes in a sexualized way. And it's kind of like, if I didn't know any better, I would have sworn there's a bit of a double standard going on here.
This is a movie that like arguably objectifies the dudes more than the ladies, and like that's only like a math thing. Like obviously Uma Thurman's outfit is rather revealing, but she also has a very funny line about like, I'll bring everything you can see here and everything you can't, which is like, also again, this movie is smarter than anybody gives it credit for. I'm telling you. Secret genius movie here, but
there's some spicy bits, like when Robin asks, like, is every part of you green or something like that to the
and she's poison. Just like, what is she says slippery when wet. No, he wanted a sign. Slippery when wet. She's like, how about slippery when slippery wet? It's like, wet. Oh, hey. Again, he needed to be drugged into being interested in this. I'm just saying for the record.
And I feel like Batman, now that you mention it, was also very aware that he was being drugged. He was like, like, he was very conscious of like, this can't be. I can't be attracted
like,
to this.
I can't be attracted to a woman. Like, what? That's not how it works for Batman, which again, like, is like, totes cool. Like,
I'm gay dating Batman, a literal supermodel and I'm not that interested in her. So it's kind of like,
he just looks like mildly disappointed that she brings up emotions. And also they like don't touch really much.
Yeah.
Like, he and his whatever girlfriend, and like the way he's explaining things to her at that dinner scene, again, as he's wearing a very gay outfit, like where he's like, you wouldn't understand, like it just reads as like a closeted queer person,
yeah,
like telling someone like you wouldn't understand, like Wilde doesn't even cover it, like, you know, like kind of like, I also think, like, I genuinely do think there's a lot about this movie that is sort of like kink coded. That, like, there's it's a lot of lines and a lot of playful stuff, and it's a lot of the power stuff, and basically, like, Batman and Robin, like, fighting over who's the top. That's, like, the whole movie. That's the whole subtext of this movie. Is Batman and Robin, who's the top, is, like, the actual subtitle that it should have been, you know, basically here. It's, like, Robin not being happy that he's a bottom. Like, he wants to be a power bottom, but he's not really doing it. It's a whole thing. They talk about rope all the time. They talk about who's hanging from where. Like, all of it. Like, this whole fucking movie. I don't know. You know, maybe people will think I'm reaching a little far. But, like, look who directed it, y'all. Like, I'm not making up, oh, there's some movie from, like, 1922 where, you know, a very, like, dorky, straight-laced, heterosexual person directed this movie. Like, that ain't what we're talking about here.
So. And wouldn't it be like the amazing like troll job of the century? Like, to be like, you have to do a happy, like, family friendly Batman.
Oh my god.
And one that I read somewhere that he was like, the link was no longer there, so I couldn't see it. There was a little mention on Wikipedia that Schumacher said that he was kind of pressured to do the most toyistic movie, and watching it with my husband, he mentioned like, this looks like a movie made to sell toys.
Yep.
And once you see that, you can't unsee it. It really does. So
toys,
I don't doubt that,
should be sex toys. Like, should in a in an actual world, like based on anything like reality, there would be toys, sure, but there would also be lots and lots of sex toys based on this movie, for sure. No
sex
question.
Batman sex toys. Maybe that's our new business.
I mean, honestly,
support us.
Honestly, maybe this is what we should be doing.
Maybe this is how we find our like our first million. Who knows?
Let's stew
on this thought. But it is to me like it makes it all the more delicious to think about like, you know, somebody just shoving in all this, not only gay, but like kink messaging in this family friendly toy selling movie that
superhero movie. Like, honestly, that gives me a little bit of hope for humanity. Not much,
that
but like
a gives
little
me bit. So much joy. Yeah. I love it for all of us. But he was saying that it sucked and he like kind of said that he hadn't watched it again because he couldn't. So maybe he needs to rewatch it.
Yes.
And listen to this episode. So if any of you listening out there have some contact with swoony George Clooney, just send him this. Be like, hey, give your Batman a shot. Hear what Danielle has to say. Maybe he'll reconsider. He seems like
honestly,
a reasonable person.
It's this movie's time. And also, like, I feel so... Like, this is so similar to Showgirls in so many ways of, like, people just didn't get it at the time. People just didn't understand, like, kind of what was going on. People just weren't ready. I think people know what kink is now, maybe, or they have some idea. They probably have the wrong idea. But I feel like a lot of people have heard of it who maybe didn't hear of it in the 90s. Yeah. And, like, people know that gay people exist now. I do think that, you know, we're in enough corners of the world and out, at least in like America, that like people know that gay people exist, at least. I'm not even entirely sure that they did not all that long ago, to be totally honest with you. It's weird, but true. I think that, you know, at least queer folks are a bit more visible. So now maybe is the time. Now is the time. That people are ready for Joel Schumacher's vision of, again, what a superhero movie should be.
I love
and
that.
And ideally
also,
is. Yeah.
You also included another observation about the password on the secret disc. Speaking of sex toys.
I can't even. I cannot even. It's Peg. The fucking password is Peg. Yeah. Sure. I know it's supposed to be like Margaret. Whatever. It's Peg. The password on the disc is Peg. It's Peg. I can't even imagine, like, Joel Schumacher was probably, like, putting a lot of this in, like, semi-secret. Or, like, you know, saying, like, oh, play it this way without necessarily telling people, like, oh, because it's gay. Because this is much cooler, because this is so gay. Oh, you're fighting to be a top or fighting to be a bottom, blah, 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 because this is like a kink thing. I doubt that he even said that. But I am just gonna, I'm just my theory that he thought this was very fucking funny that he's making these like massive budget hetero movies be this gay. Like, I can only imagine like just getting some satisfaction from that, basically.
Joel, if you can hear us. And if that was the case.
He's not among us anymore, very sadly.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm talking to the entity. Joel, if you can hear
us. The ghost of Joel. The ghost of Joel, I see you and I appreciate you so much. So much. Where the haters could not, I am here appreciating for every single one of them times 10. Like, I'm appreciating them.
We were just talking about starting a cult before we started rolling today. This casual pre-podcast conversation.
That's what we talk about.
Which you'll understand the reason why soon. And then maybe this is the cult video. Maybe you're about to open people's eyes and spread the gospel of Batman and Robin. I feel like this is it's good source material. It's a good way to weed out the non-believers right off the bat. Exactly. Unfortunately, I will have to kick my husband out of the cult. He won't be able to join us.
Oh, no.
Yeah, he really, really, really hates the movie. We spent the entire movie. He only watched like 20 minutes of it with me. And the entire time he was like, this sucks. Holy shit, this movie sucks. Holy fuck, this sucks. And I'm like, I know, it's amazing. Or I know, isn't it great? Or I know, don't you love it? And then at one point I was just like, dude, just don't. You're killing my vibe here. Like, I'm a trash panda. Let me enjoy my trash. Like, you're just not letting me savor it. And he got the message.
I also, like, I have space in my heart for people who don't like it. Yeah. As long as they don't try to argue that it's heterosexual.
Okay. I feel
in any fashion, like of any dimension, any molecule of this movie is heterosexual. And then, like, I can still be like, I understand you don't like it. That's fine. But don't even begin to pretend that this movie is a heterosexual film for heterosexuals.
Because that's the only demand of our, God. Truly. That's the only dogma.
You can be cults. Whoever, you can have whatever opinion, you know, whatever. Just don't even begin to try to say that Batman and Robin isn't an incredibly gay film. So
we're going to call ourselves CGB, Cult of the Gay Batman. And we're going to have amazing outfits.
That's us.
I'm already like a latex pleather girl myself. So I feel like this will fit in with my sense of style. Amazing.
Absolutely.
No flaws.
Absolutely.
One thing I did want to get into, you alluded to I think it's the main point of our disagreement, but I do think I'm in the wrong here. I understand on a conscious level that I'm in the wrong, but viscerally, emotionally, like you really hate Jeremy Renner. I don't hate Uma Thurman as an entity. I should clarify Uma Thurman, the person. Like her, think she's awesome, pretty, whatever you're doing, Uma, I hope you're thriving right now. But I hate her as Poison Ivy. I hate her to an extent. I can't even stop. As a goofy scientist, I'm cool with it. But Poison Ivy is giving me middle school play. Like, to me, it's very much like a teenager being like, breathed on, like, you're gonna play this seductress and you're gonna wear these shoes that are in the archive and they're a little too big for you, and you're gonna wear a red dress because, like, that's what people think is sexy when you're a teenager, and you're gonna have to seduce these guys, but, like, she doesn't know how to seduce guys. Like, her braces get caught on things, she has like apple bits on her like brackets, and she's trying to be sexy, and that's her idea of it. To me, that's Poison Ivy, as portrayed by Uma Thurman. And I truly profoundly hate it. But I can't. Like, every gesture, the movements, to me, is just all very, 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 like, just very try hard, very tacky. Cannot. To me, sexiness needs to be effortless. It needs to be something that a person kind of exudes. And to me, this didn't. And then again, how are you going to do that in a movie like this, right? I know it had to be extra. She was probably like told to be extra. And I know you, not the only you, because you shared some reviews and stuff, like, disagree with me. You actually like Uma Thurman in this.
Yes, I really do. But again, I have room in my heart for disagreement, because this is such a over the wall, like, over the top. So over the top, it's in orbit around Saturn kind of performance. And, like, that can be tiring. Like, I get it. Like, if I was not in the mood, I think, to watch Uma Thurman be that far over the top, I would have been annoyed by it too. Like, it is turned up to 11, like 100%. For me, she reads like a drag queen. Like, she reads like the makeup, like, this is a really drag performance. It's the makeup, it's the mannerisms, it's the, like, winking and blinking and making the hand movements. Like, it's very drag to me. And I am not. I know you have watched a lot more of RuPaul's Drag Race than I have. Most of the drag I've been to in my life is, like, in person. I don't have, like, a great, like, I just don't have a great sense of, like, what TV drag is, or what, like, a lot of modern, like, filmed drag is. It's drag brunch in Bushwick. That's, like, for me, like, that's what that's the drag in my life, right? Or, like, going to, like, there's a local place that's like has a lot of burlesque and a lot of drag and a lot of stuff like that. So, like, for me, it's like aerialists and drag doing whatever the fuck, right? So, again, if I'm like wrong here, you've seen more of that type of drag than I have.
No,
that's just how it read. So drag. And I know she is a woman. She's an actress who identifies as a woman. So I'm not saying this is a drag performance, but it felt like her inspirations were drag queens. And, like, somebody, I have it in my notes, but that there was some review that it was like, she's doing Mae West by way of Jessica Rabbit. And someone else said Mae West by way of a drag queen. So, like, somewhere in there is, like, the influence that she's kind of working with here. But that's how it read for me. So I really enjoyed it. And I thought it was very fun and playful how like really, really, I think, winking at the camera, the like nerdy girl in glasses becomes hot, like trope was done. It felt very, very obvious to me that that was like, oh, we're doing this on purpose. We are not like, this is like a commentary of how stupid of a trope that that is, right? Yeah. Like she's being dorky and gawky at points and then being, I'm seductive. Like it's so stupid. And it's so sexual. Like, it's really, really very sexual. The way she's, like, slippery when wet and, oh, the things that aren't showing. Like, she is just trying to fuck every guy in this movie and no guy is interested in her in the slightest. Like, that's what's happening here. So there's a lot going on with, like, gender and play and dynamics that was fun for me to watch. But, again, I truly respect, like, your opinion and your taste here because – I also get it that sometimes when things are this heightened, you can fall, right? Like it's easy to fall from that height, basically, right?
And I see what you're saying. And especially even before you mentioned that, there was a scene right after like she takes over a room and makes it like her plant paradise thing. And then I love how, so she's an environmentalist, I think. That's kind of like
That's eco-terrorist environmentalist, you know, that's kind of the,
And then she's like, I just want plants to be able to defend themselves like animals. I'm like, that's the most terrifying thing anybody could ever think of. Why would you want that, Uma? Why would you want that? Have you seen plants? They're really scary. Even if they can't do anything, why would you want them to attack us? And you're crossing them with snakes, the most vile creature in nature? Absolutely not. But there is a point where she, like, I guess when she's kind of like completing her transformation, where they show her makeup. And I immediately thought, this is the draggiest she's looked.
This is drag.
And that's very much by at the end when she's about to get like defeated by Robin, who puts a thing on his lips because so as to avoid on the vein of the mask reveals in Mission Impossible. He has a capsule on his lips to avoid being poisoned by the poison ivy. But she had a makeup that like the eyebrows were, they seemed like kind of glued and done way up and the eyeshadow way up in a very, very drag way. And I immediately fixated on that. I was like, oh, that is an incredibly drag makeup. So that to me, what you're talking about, it does make a lot of sense. I just don't know. I feel like I would have liked somebody else in the part. I don't know. But again, it fit with the rest of the movie. It's a visceral kind of reaction of mine. And then onto the other woman of the movie. And that's another thing, right? The movie packs a lot in 2 hours. Which to me, again, is the other problem. You don't really... On the one hand, it's not a problem because you're constantly entertained. As you said, Danielle, it's so much campiness and so much color and everything is so over the top. I love the costume designs. The set pieces, the way they made Gotham instead of the very depressing Gotham we're kind of used to, this Gotham is like vibrant and we don't see a lot of it, but the little we see is just a lot of lights. It's a very vibrant place, right?
It's neon and black light and like statues of unbelievably ripped men holding things up. Like, again, I don't mean to be a drum here. I don't mean to be a drum, but the gayest thing ever.
But it is like, it's all like yummy to look at, in my opinion. Even though some choices are questionable, like the jungle people at the jungle party.
Not the best.
Choices were made that I don't know that I love in this very white movie to have just like jungle people and like the mindless villain being obviously Latino. Like, do I like that? Not really. But
I think that's really worth mentioning if you want to get into that, because I didn't even notice it because I'm an idiot. But like you made a really, really good point in the notes of like Bane's whole thing here actually really sucks. It's not great.
Yeah. So I was reading up because I don't really know the history of Bane. I knew him because of the Nolan movie, and he's wonderfully portrayed by Tom Hardy, because obviously it's Tom Hardy. He can literally never do anything wrong, even though he did that horrible movie with Reese Witherspoon and Chris Pine.
Yeah,
he's still yummy and amazing and delicious in it. So he can get away with anything. But I digress. The point is, Tom Hardy, I think he did like a portrayed a really freaking cool Bane. It was like a very layered villain, a very interesting guy with a very obviously different story than this Bane. I was looking it up, and Bane, apparently the character is vaguely Latino.
Okay.
Because he's from a fictional place. Santa Prisca, which is supposed to be like in the Caribbean. And he escapes a prison that has a Latin sounding name, Peña Duro, something like this. And he has a teddy bear that he called Osito, which is a little bear in Spanish, which had a knife in it that he used to defend himself, of course, because he's Bane. There is a Latino like roots to the character himself. But in the movie, like, we only see him for a second, right? He's this like petty criminal, scrawny. We hear that his name is Antonio Diego, which could be in Spanish. It could be Brazilian too. This is a name that is also Portuguese sounding. But then they put what to me looks a lot like a Lucha mask.
Sure.
While the original Bane, like, his mask kind of lucha is, but not as obvious from what I can tell. And then, like, he becomes this dim-witted villain who is just all muscle, no brain at all. No brain, just brawn. And he just basically is there as this, like, inflatable, like, character to serve Uma Thurman, and he gets defeated in the dumbest fucking way because he just pulled the plug. Because he's a juiced up like character. He's scrawny, but he's like got this venom floating into him, and that's how he's like a super strong character. Because that's the original thing. He's supposed to be strong enough to break Batman's back. Like, that's kind of his origin. But like, when you see him in the movie, the Nolan movie, he's just this really intelligent, if deranged, character with all these layers. And of course, you can't compare. He's a very secondary character here. It's an entirely different context. But like, I just was like, you know what? There's one Latino person in this whole thing, and he's this fucking dim-witted asshole who gets defeated in the dumbest fucking way. Like, how can you be a super strong, almost like unbeatable henchman who is also very beatable, because the way to beat him is just pulling this incredibly apparent visible plug that's on the literal back of his head. Make it make sense to me. It does not.
Yeah, it's pretty, it's not great. It's super not great. I completely agree with you.
I get it. Different times. Like, I'm sure nobody was even thinking about it, but it's a little.
I think it's a more than fair point. Like, it does suck, and it's not good. And the fact I didn't even see it is, like, also not great. Because it's like, I'm so busy looking at the cod pieces and hearing the lines about the rubber suits and how much it turns on Poison Ivy that I didn't see, like, a fairly obvious, like, shitty thing about this movie. Yeah. Like, let's be clear. That's pretty shitty.
Representation matters. Latinos can be fucking assholes too.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Of course. It's just like this way. Like, in this one stupid way of like, oh, that's, you know, like, oh, haha. Yeah. You know. It's not exactly the best.
And then, like, everybody else is very much white. We have like Vivica A. Fox appearing for a total of 2 seconds.
I know. I realize. And it's like, she just wants to get some too. Like, the women can't have sex in this movie. The men are not interested at all.
I mean, Uma Thurman cannot, because like, she literally killed people. I think she kills them with kisses. Also, I don't know what the rest of
her drugging like has to physically drug these guys to even be interested, like, at all, like, to even kiss. Like, it's very
Chris O'Donnell does seem a little like infatuated with the Alicia Silverstone character, which is I was going we on the
oh yes tangent, I'm sorry but. please go
no
for
it's
that.
Just I so Alicia Silverstone appears in this as Batgirl again. It's a lot, like that's the thing. We have like Mr. Freeze and the whole storyline about him wanting to save his wife, who he cryogenically conserved because she had a fatal syndrome, McGregor syndrome. I immediately, like, my MMA brain immediately went to, does it make you an Irish asshole?
Exactly.
Conor McGregor is an Irish fighter, for those of you who do not know. But asshole. Who fucking sucks, straight up sucks. But so, like, there's that. And then you have Poison Ivy, who I guess I still don't know her motivations. I think it's plans to take over and, like, get revenge on humans because humans suck and like kill plants.
She also wants to like restart the world.
Okay,
like you know, get rid of all the people and then she can restart the whole world and it'll be awesome. Like that's her whole thing. So
yeah, I feel like that's a big decision for a single person. Like not knocking it. Like sometimes I kind of feel like we're hopeless and we do need to start from scratch. But I'm also like, I don't think it's up for one person to decide who gets to repopulate it. So it sounds like a bit of a slippery slope over there. I don't know. Just thinking. Unless a person is Keanu Reeves, like he's allowed to decide. Like if I were to choose a person to decide, like I trust Keanu to make the proper choices for all of humanity.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Not Poison Ivy. Poison Ivy has been... She needs to unpack her trauma first.
Yeah, she does. She really does. Absolutely. Like,
you literally just went through a very scary experience. And then you got transformed into like a creature who can seduce men, but not even make out with them. Like this must be a lot to process. I feel like you need some time to sit with yourself and understand your new circumstances before you start repopulating the earth. And then the other woman, like I was saying, is Batgirl, who I liked her more than I was expecting.
Same.
Same. Right, like the Alicia Silverstone character.
I was
like,
she's actually pretty cool. You know, she's doing a lot of like the really almost, you know, she's like kind of the new Robin, like the slightly troubled kid who's really into motorcycles and also a super genius and also a computer genius and also a martial arts superstar. She's basically amazing. Just sort of a younger Robin. So Robin is now going to be kind of like, oh, I get to be older than someone kind of thing. And they have, you know, they have whatever their partnership at the end, but like, she's actually pretty cool. And she has that great speech that you mentioned in your notes about like servitude and like, oh, Alfred's happy and all this kind of shit, which was like, honestly, you're making some great points there. You're making some good points, Batgirl. I don't remember her name in the movie until she's Batgirl. I'm sure she has some other name too.
I totally forgot too. Again, it's a lot to think about in this movie.
Yeah, it's true.
Like that because that's another storyline. So Alfred is dying again for by the same like disease, the McGregor syndrome that Mr. Freeze's wife was suffering from when she was frozen. I love that it's like he's still stage one, like it's not as serious as the Freeze
as what she
lady,
had.
Blonde lady, and then he's like on his deathbed. I'm like, how does this progress to be
barely breathing, and it's like stage one, it's not too serious as he dies. Like, what the fuck?
What's worse than literal death in terms of a disease progression?
Right? I mean,
there are worse things, in life, but like in this perfect situation. But again, there you can't be bothered with asking those types of questions. Like, why does Batgirl get a mole after she becomes Batgirl?
Right?
She gets a mole under her lip. It makes absolutely no sense. Why?
Is
I need
it like
explanations, but I feel like I'm not going to get them.
Is it like what's Batman's name when he's not being, sorry, Superman's name when he's,
oh,
Superman's
Clark?
Name when he's not being Superman. Yeah, like a Clark Kent glasses situation and she has a stupid fake mole. Like, I don't know.
She gets a fake mole. Like, this to me is so unexplainable. It's just like when we're watching Hard Target and the lady put the lit cake inside the drawer. It's one of those things that are just going to, like, haunt me forever. It just makes absolutely no sense. I feel like I'm missing a very important nod to something here because this was a choice. Somebody was like, put that mole there. And we never got an explanation for it. But I digress. And her name is Barbara in the
right Barbara in the
series.
Of course.
And yeah, Rodrigo was telling me that in other universes, or I don't know, the actual universe, she's actually Commissioner Gordon.
Right, Barbara Gordon
daughter.
Instead of Barbara Wayne. I don't know. Barbara Winford.
Wilson. I don't,
Barbara Wilson. Sure.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah, like Alfred is dying from this disease and she gives this little speech to Robin about how like she wants to give enough money that Alfred can like live his life. And it's like, yay. What do you mean? He loves being here. She's like,
he loves being a servant.
His yeah. family. Who hasn't heard that? He's like family. He's not. And she's like, you pay him to like do your dishes. How can you call him family? He's happy. I'm like, oh my God. This,
oh yeah.
This little piece in the middle of this chaotic mess of a movie contains so much truth that is applicable in 2022.
It's true.
But again, I digress. But yeah, she's an interesting little like, character. Like she's very stereotypically college feminist in many yeah. ways. Like she gives yeah. the poison ivy like a little speech before fighting her, like, you're using your female charms to get what you want. You give women a bad name and things yeah. like that. But I still like her. I feel like they were able to pack in a little bit of layering there in a movie that doesn't really, it's not in the business of nuanced and complex characters by any means.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How could
you? And it's
you?
Also like, I don't forgive what she says, but she does use the line, I kicked her botanical butt. That was me. Which, all right. All right, Batgirl, I'm going to give you that one. I'll give you that one. That was pretty funny to me. I don't know why. It just really worked for me. Botanical butt. There it is. There it is.
The people writing, I would imagine being like the actor receiving the script and just being like, I need to say this with a straight face. And again, to me, it's hilarious because you have all these actors like in a
great actors.
Great yeah. actors and well-known and big names. And they're saying the most ridiculous shit with a straight face. Oh. And that's skill. Like, and really, as Paul yeah. pointed out, a Coolio cameo.
Oh my God, that's right. I actually was watching it. I said out loud, is that Coolio? it totally is. It's Coolio. Oh yep, my God,
he was
I love
in the
it.
Motorcycle scenes. Because we also get like motorcycle chasing scenes. People yes. talk about Nolan's car chase scene. That could never. The real chase scene it's yep. a motorcycle. And the villains with the like neon paint that get kicked out so that it's again, it's a lot.
There's a lot going on. I will say this movie could have been 75 minutes long and still like really retained everything it needed for sure. For sure. For sure. But yeah.
And cut
nothing
a
is
bunch
perfect.
Of it.
Nothing is perfect.
You would concede that Mad Men and Robin, one of the most malign movies of all time, is not perfect.
Yeah, there's some things wrong here. I will fully admit, not everything is firing on all cylinders, but enough is firing on enough cylinders that it's pretty wonderful. So, IMO.
I love your fandom. Thank of you. This, Danielle. We'll get it. I'm sure we'll get into it more when we discuss the little, when we go to our final segment. But before we do, is there anything else you want to add that we haven't touched on?
Oh my goodness. I don't think so. Oh, yes. Sorry. One last thing. The Majora's Mask Scary Moon appears to be in this movie. It's not really the Majora's Mask Scary Moon, but for video game nerds, there's like a brief moment where it's in the program for whatever, the telescope thing. And Bruce Wayne gives it to Poison Ivy, whatever Poison Ivy, Doctor Whoever, Poison Ivy. And you just get this like beautiful thing of like a screaming moon that looks a lot like the Majora's Mask screaming moon. And I thought that was cool. And I kind of wonder if that was somewhat inspiration for Majora's Mask. I don't know that it was. It just looked like it to me. And it made me happy.
I yep, was like, I was feeling like, should I know what this is? And then you said it's a video game thing. So I was like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
It makes
yeah,
sense
yeah.
that I don't know. I was like, should I pretend I know and then Google it?
Oh, no. It's a video game nerd thing. Listen, my nerddom contains multitudes. And that's
it does.
Among it.
It truly is a skill. It's wonderful.
It's close, right, Paul? It looks pretty close to the scary moon. It's like a moon with like scary eyes and a scary mouth. So it's just a quick shot. But again, just going to tell how fun and off the fucking wall the production design is. Wonderful, wonderful visuals.
Yeah, I'll say this. Even if you know you don't like the movie, but you're like kind of like maybe if you want to rewatch, if you're willing to give it another watch, and like if you focus on the costume design and like these little pieces here and there, like it will at least improve your experience of not liking it. Because again, there's a lot that's just like wrong in an objective way. So again, I get it, but you should that's one another thing like I feel like people can benefit from in a rewatch. So I guess I will settle it for our middle and second installment segment of this show, where we dive deep and we strip it down and we're ready to move on to our final segment, Shelf Life. So now we arrive at Shelf Life, which is the part of the show where we discuss where we want to place the movie, the VHS tape, in our beautiful video store. If it's a bona fide staff pick, if it should be displayed proudly as such, if it's a totally acceptable, totally cool middle aisle placement, or if it just needs to go to the freaking dumpster. And I will start with you, Danielle. I'm curious, where are you placing Batman and Robin in our video store?
I don't think it's perfect. I don't think it's perfect. All right. I just want to be clear. We have some problems here. However, it gives me enough joy where I will pull for a staff pick. Now, I will also respect, a high middle aisle placement, but my vote is for a staff pick.
I love that you're literally the only person on earth. I feel like we should. I really thoroughly enjoyed the movie. Like, I just had a ton of fun the first time, and I had a ton of fun this time. It's like a 2-hour chaotic descent into just like madness that I enjoyed every second of. But as I was doing the research for the show, literally everybody hates it. I came across like an empire, like 50 movies of all worst movies of all time list chosen by the viewers. And the first one was Batman and Robin. Like,
I can't even.
It truly is spectacularly ragged on. So I love it. I love that you're just like, fuck it. I'm going to give it a staff pick placement. Yeah. I wouldn't personally.
That's okay.
I would give it a middle aisle and with a little Danielle tag. Like, I'll put like Danielle loves this. Just that. Like a little.
I'm very okay with that. Yeah.
I would say like with a gold, but we just do it like with a rainbow, little rainbow thing.
Oh, a rainbow prism. Like a, I don't know, like a rainbow leather like harness. Like, it's just like.
Yeah, we put it on like a little, the VHS tape is like encompassed in a little harness.
In a little rainbow flagged up leather harness. And that's like, that'll tell anybody who needs to know. Like, this is.
I'll ask Danielle about this movie. I'll put this in the, she'll gladly walk you through this.
I will,
and
I
feel like that's honestly like the best decor of all the movies. Like, that's the highest honor. Anything, fuck the staff bags. Like, anybody can make it there, but this, the leather harness with the rainbow little thingy, that's a very distinct honor.
Absolutely.
Middle aisle with the proper attire.
It's ready to watch this movie. It's ready to watch this movie. Like, it's good.
Perfect. I feel like that really settles it. And that is all for this week. Thank you to my co-host, my beautiful, amazing, perfect, co-host Danielle for joining me. Thank you all at home for listening. Thank you to our producer, Paul, clever little Clover Tamayo, for all the help in making this show not only not suck, but also, in my very biased opinion, kind of rule. We would love to hear from all of you. So if you would like to get in touch with us, please send us an email to youlovetoseeit@fanbyte.com. Now, it's not you love to see it. It's the acronym. YLTSI@fanbyte.com. Again, YLTSI@fanbyte.com. We would love for you to send us your reviews, your recommendations, your questions, and any general feedback. And maybe we'll even read them on the show. We'd really, really appreciate it. And if you like the work we do and you want to show us some support, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or rate us on Spotify. It really does go a long way in helping us spread the word about the show. It really helps us out. You can find links to our other podcasts, our Discord, and our socials in the show notes. And that is all for this week. Until next time, you'll love to see it.